Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a glass of refreshing Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this hour, Canada Dry presents Information, Please. 30 minutes of quizzing with John Public supplying the questions and our panel of experts supplying the answers, plus whatever else they feel like saying. Send us stickers. We set up a four-man board to answer them. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which, human nature being what it is, they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't fret over it. Wherever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Information, Please, is an ad-lib program. We have fun doing it that way, and we hope you do, too. The rules are very simple, though the questions often are. The experts raise their hands if they know the answer or feel like guessing. And if they miss, Canada Dry cheerfully pays out $10 to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question itself. Tonight, our board consists of our reliable brace of veterans, Franklin P. Adams, creator of the famous humorous column, The Conning Tower, which appears regularly in the New York Post, and the practically unstumpable John Kieran, sports expert, classical authority, bird fancier, and what have you. Our guests of honor this evening are Bernard Jaffe, author of Crucibles, Outposts of Science, and other works humanizing scientific knowledge, and the ever-popular Clarence Buddington Kelland, whose stories and novels have delighted millions. Now, a moment ago, I referred to Mr. Kieran as a bird fancier, which leads me to believe that I had better settle the famous woodpecker controversy, which has been agitating the nation, or should I say, stirring up the dovecots, during the last week. We had a question last week in which we asked the board to tell us something about the life expectancy of the woodpecker, the lion, the swan, and the tortoise, and to arrange them in the proper order. And Mr. Kieran said that the woodpecker had the smallest life expectancy, then the lion, the swan, and then the tortoise. I questioned the information and promised to tell you this evening which is correct. Now, according to the World Almanac, last paragraph, page 468, don't bother to turn to it now. According to the World Almanac, we were right in our listing. On the other hand, according to the National Association of the Audubon Society, woodpeckers may range from 10 years to 25 in their life expectancy, according to their size and probably according to the kind of life they've lived. Now, I think that we ought to accept the Audubon Society as our authority this evening, and therefore I am going to adjudicate the question in Mr. Kieran's favor, or rather, if I may, in the favor of Information, Please. So K.O. Kieran wins over World Almanac, thus bringing great credit to this remarkable program. Now, I could go on. I have 3 or 4 cards of information to further confuse you about the life expectancy of the woodpecker, the lion, the swan, and the tortoise, but that's enough for the season. How do you feel, Mr. Kieran?
I feel a little better.
Very good. Very handsome of you. All right, let's see what you can do with this one. The first question has nothing to do with woodpeckers. It comes from Miss Elizabeth C. Bailey of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And, gentlemen, you've got to reach pretty far back to answer this one. I'm going to ask you to identify the following ads of yesteryear. When was yesteryear, Mr. Adams? I've always wanted to know just about when it was.
2 years ago.
About 2 years ago. Information, Please, never fails. Now, there's an ad, a slogan, which went, "See that pump. See that pump." Mr. Kellum.
DeLong's Hook and Eyes.
DeLong Hooks. Now, how'd you happen to know that, Mr. Kellum?
I read the streetcar ads when I was a small boy.
Now, suppose you saw the ad in those days when you were a small boy. And a very cute small boy you must have been, Mr. Kellum, finally say so. Good morning. Have you used
Pear soap?
And Mr. Kellum says pear soap, and that's quite correct. Don't get to raise your hand. I know you're eager, Mr. Kellum. I know you're eager.
You fixed me with your eye.
Cannot choose but hear.
Ask Dad, he knows. Ask Dad, he knows. Mr. Jaffe.
I think I remember that one. That was Sweet Capital Cigarette.
Sweet Capital Cigarette, but you couldn't have been a small
one. No, I was in my baby carriage.
I think it was long before that, Mr. Jaffe. Long before that. You were hardly a threat in those days. Have you a little fairy in your home? Have you a little fairy in your home? Mr. Adams.
Fairy soap.
Fairy soap. 4 out of 4. Very good indeed. The next question from Mr. John A. Schaff of Little Ferry, New Jersey, is based on familiar lines of poetry. They always seem very popular, that sort of question. I'm going to ask you to answer these first. Who stood in Venice on the Bridge of Sighs? It's a famous line of poetry, of course. I stood in Venice on the Bridge of Sighs. But who was it? Who stood in Venice on the Bridge of Sighs? I'll go on with the line. A palace and a prison on each hand. Mr. Adams, want to guess at that?
Seems famous to me.
Now, Prisoner of Chillon.
I beg your pardon?
The Prisoner of Chillon.
You got the right author, but the wrong character. It was Childe Harold in Byron's famous poem, Childe Harold's Pilgrimage. That was pretty near, Mr. Adams, but not near enough for us. Our standards are high, aren't they, Mr. Adams? All right, that's one wrong.
Our judgments are high.
3 out of 4. What stood on the floor because it was too large for the shelf? What stood on the floor because it was too large for the shelf? Mr. Killen.
Grandfather's clock.
Grandfather's clock. That's right. It was too large for the shelf. So it stood 90 years on the floor. Who wrote it, Mr. Killen? Do you know?
I wouldn't know.
Do you know, Mr. Adams? I looked it up. I may as well tell you. And I find that it was written by a man named Henry Clay Wirt, who also wrote one of Mr. Adams'
poems. Marching Through Georgia.
And another one, Mr. Adams.
Kingdom Coming.
And another one. Father, dear father, come home with me now. Wrote all those famous poems. What stood on the shores of Gitche Gumee? What stood on the shores of Gitche Gumee?
Something out of Hiawatha, but down to
that's right, Miss Kellen. That's quite right. Doing very well. Push it close, Miss. Go ahead, Miss Kellen. You've almost got it. I can almost read it in your eyes.
It's canoe.
No, it was somebody's lodge.
Yeah, that's right. Who?
The gal, what her name was.
Nothing wanted.
Hiawatha's lady friend.
As a short story, many heroine's name.
Minnie Haha.
Well, you gave us both a name. Both Minnie and Haha. No, that's not quite correct, I think. It was the wigwam of Nokomis, who was the grandfather of Hiawatha. That's pretty good, though, Miss
grandfather?
Pardon?
Nokomis.
Miss Kieran? Nokomis.
Remember Nokomis? Was a woman,
I thought it was an old lady.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, I think Nokomis was a grandfather.
Well, yeah. let's not quibble.
Yeah, I remember
about that.
I see you're thinking of his father. That was Papa Kiwis.
Father, dear father, Nokomis me now, you mean. we've got about half on that. What stood 4 to 6? What stood 4 to 6? It's a cinch. Matter of fact, it's in Miss Kieran's department, more or less. Miss Adams, all right?
Casey's team.
Well, the team itself couldn't stand 4 to 6. That's one team.
The score.
Yes, the
score.
Score
to 6.
Yes.
With but one inning left to play.
That's right. Extremely rocky for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4 to 6 with but an inning left to play. Well, I think we have to call that wrong. We've got about 2.5 out of 4. That means Mr. Schaff gets $10 plus $5 for the use of the question, courtesy of Charles Ross. The next one comes from W.D. McKenzie of Marion Station, Pennsylvania. It involves your knowledge of history. Who was the chief obstructionist to the aims and ambitions of the following? Let's get 3 out of 4 on this. Mark Antony. The one who finally destroyed Mark Antony's plans and ambitions. Mr. Kellen?
Octavius.
That's quite right. Octavian, the nephew of Julius Caesar, wasn't he? And at what battle was it that he won his great victory?
Actium.
Actium is quite right, Mr. Kellen. Don't be reticent. You see, you know these things.
Of course.
You'll gain himself confidence. who was Boss Tweed's most famous antagonist? Mr. Kellen.
Cartoonist named Nast was his most effective antagonist.
Right. Thomas Nast, famous cartoonist. Napoleon III, his antagonist. And the destroyer of his plans, Mr. Stewart.
Bismarck.
And Helen Jacobs. Mr. Jaffe.
Miss Wills.
That's right. That's quite right. Helen Wills Moody. Very good. A lot of other things besides chemistry, don't you, Mr. Jaffe?
Sometimes.
All right, see what you can do with this. That's 4 out of 4. The next question from Mr. S.D. Prensky of Brooklyn, New York,
has to do with your knowledge of, well, I should say, home science, more or less. What article in common use is suggested by the following materials? If you put together mercury in a thin glass tube with a constriction in it, you get, Mr. Jaffe, what?
A thermometer.
A thermometer. On the other hand, if you take a silver double glass wall and a vacuum and put those together, what do you get out of the mercury?
A thermos bottle.
A thermos bottle, the thing that you use to keep liquids lukewarm in the summer at picnic. And suppose you have a sheet of celluloid, some gelatin, and silver bromide. Put those together, what do you get? Mr. Jaffe.
Photographic film.
Photographic film, yes. Put them together and you get the candid camera. Now, sulfur dioxide and a compression pump put together. Any other volunteers tried Mr. Jaffe on this? Sulfur dioxide and compression pump, Mr. Jaffe.
Household electric refrigerator.
An electric refrigerator, yes. An ice cube manufacturer. Very good. 4 out of 4, Mr. Jaffe. Not so easy, I guess. Are your students listening in, Mr. Jaffe?
I hope so.
You mean you hope so far?
I assign them for homework.
Hope you don't make any blunders on the next few questions, Mr. Jaffe. Keep tuned in, all students, and Mr. Bernard Jaffe. Keep tuned in. The next question. The next question is from Charlie White of Seattle, Washington. Mr. White just wants you to describe, 3 famous boners in sports. Any sport. Mr. Sheeran, start us off.
Well, Merkel made one of the most famous boners in sports in a game. And, New York Giants was on base in 1909, playing the Chicago Cubs. And with the supposed winning hit made, he being on first, he ran to the clubhouse instead of touching second base. And the ball was recovered in second base, so they say. And the game ended in a tie instead of the Giants winning. And it had to be played off, and the Giants lost the playoff game in the pennant.
Yes, did you call that perhaps the most famous boner in baseball?
It was the most famous boner of 1908.
Right.
Did you have another boner on your mind, Mr. Adam? Yeah, I know you had your hand.
Mr. Sheeran just made one.
We'll add that to the list.
Another one?
Got another boner.
Long John Anderson of the Yankees stole second base with the bases filled on the old hilltop ground.
You know, Mr. Sheeran, you sound almost as if you were reading that. How do you know these things? That's 2 boners. Let's have another. Mr. Killen.
Regals ran the wrong way with the bay with the ball in the Rose Bowl game.
That's right. Between what two?
California and somebody else.
Georgia Tech, yeah. It was. Did you see that boner made, Mr.
No,
Killen?
I didn't draw that.
I've never believed it. Here it is down on the car. That's quite right. 3 boners out of 3. Very good. Now, let's see. So far, the boys in the counting house have counted out only $10 to send to the sagacious questioners who've stumped our experts. We're doing pretty well, Miss Adams, aren't we? Don't you think? And now Canada Dry's own expert, Mr. Milton Cross, takes his trick at the microphone.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. Many people enjoy every day drinking a long, tall glass filled with sparkling ginger ale. For it's a most refreshing and delicious beverage. Pure and healthful, too, as proved by the fact that one of the first liquids prescribed for convalescents is ginger ale. So if you haven't tried it recently, may we suggest you do. During the day, when you're busy and tired and want a pickup, while you're motoring, when it's hot and dusty, when your children come home from school and want some refreshment, any time, in fact, you'll find a glass of ginger ale is a tasty, tangy, and enjoyable drink. And when you ask for ginger ale, order Canada Dry, for it's made with the most fastidious care, using only the finest ingredients, the purest water, and bottled under rigid sanitary conditions. Yes, ginger ale is a refreshing beverage, and Canada Dry is known as the champagne of ginger ale.
There you go. That message from Canada Dry was delivered by Mr. Cross. I clock it at 52 seconds. Now, suppose we get to the second half of the program with a question coming from Mr. Paul Grant of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. What did each of the following lose? Here's one that's harder. Belinda. B-E-L-I-N-D-A. Mr. Sheeran.
She lost a lock of hair.
Yes, what's the reference?
The Rape of the Lock.
By whom?
Pope.
Very good. What century?
Oh, shucks. You trying to pin me down?
1908.
Let's have the first 2 lines of The Rape of the Lock, Mr. Sheeran. Any chance of getting that out of you? I'm really being
very
hard
on. I can't recall it. No,
what dire offense from amorous causes spring? Yeah. What mighty contests rise from trivial things? How true. Very good. Peter Schlemiel. What did Peter Schlemiel lose? Mr. Sheeran again.
His shadow.
What's the literary reference?
It's a little story, a child's story, but I'm afraid I'm going to fall down now. I don't remember who wrote it.
Most people would fall down on that. Not a very well-known writer, Adalbert von Chamisso, I think it was. Very hard name to pronounce, that's why it's not become very popular, perhaps. What did the organist lose? Mr. Adams.
The chord.
Yes, chord. What's the reference?
Sullivan's The Lost Chord.
Sullivan's The Lost Chord, seated one day at the organ. 4 out of 4 on losses. Very good. Now, the next one is from Mr. G. Simpson of Detroit, Michigan. Gentlemen, you, of course, know the difference between a gourmand and a gourmet. Mr. Kellum, do you know the difference between a gourmand and a gourmet?
I fancy.
I doubt that you do. Very well. If you are a gourmet, you should be able to tell me what the following phrases used in cookery mean. Au gratin. Au gratin, monsieur.
With cheese.
With cheese, or more generally with a brown crusted breadcrumbs, often made with butter or cheese. But au gratin and cheese are connected, there's no doubt. You saw the word parmentier after a dish. What would it mean to you? Parmentier, P-A-R-M-E-N-T-I-E-R-E. Mr. Kieran, apparently you eat out a good deal. Yes, Mr. Kieran.
Well, what, parmentier, of course, was a Frenchman.
He was indeed.
Yes, he's the man who introduced potatoes into France, by the way.
Right, right. So if you saw parmentier after the name of the dish,
there would be potatoes with it.
Yes, made with potatoes. In Gaelic, known simply as spud. That's right.
Corrupted in French to pomme de terre.
Don't any of you other gentlemen eat?
You're getting me awful hungry right now.
Well, let's get on another question for you, Mr. Adams, pretty soon. Suppose you saw the word jardiniere after the name of the dish on a menu. J-A-R-D-I-N-I-E-R-E. Mr. Killen.
Means it. Cooked in the flower pot.
No, I'm sorry. The quick raising flour, no doubt. No, that wouldn't be right in terms of cookery, though possibly in terms of botany. Jardinier really means, I guess, Mr. Adams.
With a lot of garden vegetables.
Yes, with a lot of garden vegetables. Now, you might have guessed that from the word jardinier. Jardin, French for garden, a kind of vegetable dish, a mixture of vegetables served in soup or with beef. Thank you, Mr. Adams.
55 cents.
No blue plate.
On the blue plate.
Oh, on the blue plate. Ever succeed, by the way, Mr. Adams, in getting any... I know you had a campaign once going to have waiters give you the coffee after the meal. Any luck on that? How'd you make out? Didn't you run a campaign once to have waiters give you the coffee after the meal instead of with?
No, I want a with or not at all. Useless.
Both you.
They won't do it.
How about, Mr. Adams, a menu on your favorite blue plate special in which you saw the words à l'anglaise. À l'anglaise. What would that mean?
Means an English style.
Yes, which means what?
Oh, tastes like mutton.
Oh, not much. Thank you, Keller. But more generally, what would it mean? In the English style. Well, you're all right. You're really all right. You're roasted or boiled in the plainest manner. In the most simple or plain manner would be à l'anglaise. Well, I think we got 3 out of 4 on that. Now, the next one. Involve your knowledge of scientific history. Mr. L. Littell of Brooklyn, New York, wants you to answer the following. What scientific discoveries do the following bring to mind? A broth of germs. A broth of germs. Mr. Jesse, had your hand raised?
Yes. I would say Pasteur might answer that.
Well, what did he do?
Why, he was trying to find the connection between disease and microorganisms. And, wait a minute, it might refer to Sponsani's attempt to...
I wish you'd stuck to Pasteur.
Pasteur? Well, I'll go back to Pasteur.
Stick to Pasteur.
Vote for one.
All right, Pasteur, he was trying to show that microorganisms would be killed when heated in a fluid.
Would be killed when heated in a fluid.
In other words, when they couldn't resist high temperature.
Well, I think you're all right on Pasteur, and you're all right, but I don't think that you're quite precise in telling us what he attempted to prove. He was attempting to disprove the theory of spontaneous generation. He
that's why I mentioned Sponsani, who did that really first.
Ah, that's clever of you, Mr. I think I'll let him get away with it, Mr. Adams.
I would, on account of the kids.
All right. Well, what Pasteur did was cover one flask of broth and allow the other to be exposed to the air. And in the one that which is exposed to the air, the germs develop and not in the other. In fact, the case of too many germs spoiling the broth, as you were going to say, Mr. Jaffe, there's not the slightest doubt. Now, suppose I use the term six teams of horses. Would that mean anything in the history of science? Mr. Jaffe again.
That was an incident where air was taken out of a large metal bowl, and three teams of horses on each side tried to pull them apart.
Yeah. What did it prove?
It proved that the air exerted a certain amount of pressure.
Yes, a great deal. Once you created a vacuum, wasn't it, between those two iron
hemispheres?
Hemispheres. Did you give me the name of the man who was responsible for this experiment? Don't have to. Otto von Guericke. Otto von Guericke. By the way, do you know where you'll find that experiment very beautifully recounted and sketched?
In the Museum of Science and Industry.
Yes, and also in a book called Crucibles by Bernard Jaffe. You've forgotten it. Described the experiment at great length. 2 out of 2 so far. Now, hysterics and anesthetics. Hysterics and anesthetics. What would that bring to mind if I just use those two words? Mr. Turing.
Well, it would bring laughing gas to mind used as an anesthetic.
Right.
But
what's the effect of laughing gas, at least the first time it was used?
The first time it was used?
Yeah.
It was inhaled by the inventor rather accidentally, and he began to laugh hysterically, drawing a lot of attention to himself.
Yes, I think the experiment tested mainly with the Humphrey Davy. That's exactly
with right. Nitrous oxide. A?
A is right. Nitrous oxide, Mr. Adams. Now, the fourth and last is sparkling water. That's a setup for a plug.
Cannon dry.
Yes, I know, Mr. Adams. Do you think I'd take advantage of a setup like that? Of course we would.
Yes.
Now, Mr. Jaffe.
Well, are you referring to the discovery of seltzer water by Priestley?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was back in the latter part of the 18th century.
Yeah, a lot of exciting things are happening then. Yes. And Priestley did what?
He bubbled carbon dioxide gas to water.
And found out what happened.
That it had a very pleasant taste,
very
like
pleasant.
Canada Dry, I suppose.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
That's
4 out of 4. I think we're pretty good on that. The next question from Ruth Malloy of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Please identify the following quotations, all beginning with the two words, call me. Call me. The first is, call me Ishmael. Call me Ishmael. Mr. Turing.
That's the opening phrase of Moby Dick by Herman Melville.
Yes, and I should say one of the greatest opening phrases of any book that's ever been
and
written.
And the phrases that follow are equally good.
Equally good. Thank you very much, Turing. And Mr. Melville, unhappily deceased, thanks you too. Call me what instrument you will. Call me what instrument you will. That's the toughest of the four. It's a line that Hamlet uses, addressing Guildenstern. Call me what instrument you will. Though you can fret me, you cannot play upon me. Do you remember now?
Yes,
Mr. Adams. Of course we do. Call me pet names, dearest. That is not from Shakespeare, Mr. Adams. Call me pet names, dearest. Mr. Adams.
It's a song.
Yes, very good. You know how it goes on? Call me pet names, dearest.
Call me...
That's right.
And then the pet name is there.
Yeah, a bird. A bird, Mr. Adams. Call me a bird that flies to thy breast at one cherishing word. Very good. You call me chief. Mr. Adams.
Spartacus to the gladiators.
Very good. You can recite it, Mr. Adams.
I'd love to.
Go ahead.
And ye do well to call me chief. Who for 4 long years in the arena, etc.
That's perfect. It's 12 long years. That's all right. We split it up 3 ways on this program.
Written by the Reverend Elijah Kellogg.
Oh, you're supposed to get that quite right. How'd you know that, Mr. Adams? Reverend Elijah Kellogg is quite right.
Because he lived in Casco Bay.
That seems perfectly clear to me. We're supposed to get 4 out of 4 on that, so we lose $10 to Miss Malloy of Philadelphia, plus $5 for the use of the press. Thank you. Now, the next question comes from Leroy Singer of this city. The following was slang terms during the last World War. Can you explain what each one means? The first is shave tail. That's pretty easy. You're Mr. Jaffe.
A second Louis.
A second Louis. You say that with some bitterness, Newt.
I never liked him.
Never did like him. Goldfish. Goldfish. Mr. Kellum.
Canned rations.
Canned what?
Rations.
Yes, but more particularly.
Salmon.
Salmon, yes. Canned salmon. Kiwi. Kiwi. Mr. Kieran.
Kiwi was an aviation cadet before he got off the ground.
Yes, what's the word?
It's a flightless bird.
Life expectancy, Mr. Adams?
64 and three-quarter years.
I'm sure that's correct. And reading your shirt would mean what? Let's hear it again.
Looking for quaint little visitors.
How did they do? How did they do it exactly?
Just took off your shirt and went through and picked them out and stepped on them.
Sometimes, Mr. Do you have a different method, Mr.
Well, we usually done at night by candlelight.
Yes, they're singeing, yeah. Singeing them
off. Aromatic.
A pretty trick, yes. That's quite true. Now, we may have time for one more, or part of one more. The next from Mr. A. Singer of New Orleans, Louisiana. Quote a famous question asked in literature of an old man. Famous question asked of an old man. Mr. Adams.
Do you think at your age it is right?
Very good. From Father William, of course, Lewis Carroll. A question asked of a baby. Of a baby. Mr. Adams. Yes.
Where did you come from, baby dear?
Yes. How does it go on? Yes.
Out of the...
Nowhere.
Nowhere into the here.
Out of the everywhere, I think.
Everywhere, yes, all right.
Settling the fact of life in a sentence or two. And I'm afraid that's all we're going to have time for tonight. That brings Canada's Eyes losses up to $20. Now Mr. Cross has a word for you, and then I'll tell you about our guests for next week.
When a man has done a job well, words of praise always ring happily on his ears. I'm sure this is true of even the most modest author who appears on Information Please. And it's equally true in the industries as in the arts. The creators of Canada Dry Water quite frankly relish the praise that is constantly given their sparkling product. For ever since this delicious club soda became available, people all over the country have been praising it most heartily. There is every reason for the popularity of sparkling Canada Dry Water. It blends well, makes your favorite drink taste better, come to life and stay lively for a good long time. For actually, laboratory tests have proved that after the bottle has been opened, this water will stay alive and sparkling for at least 24 hours in a refrigerator. So ask for sparkling Canada Dry Water the next time you order club soda. And incidentally, now you can purchase Information Please questions and answers in regular book form at your favorite book or department store.
Thank you. And may I remark in passing that the Indian department has just phoned in to tell us that Nokomis is a grandmother and not a grandfather, which will be a surprise to everybody. Thank you, Mr. Jaffe and Mr. Kellen, for your noble efforts this evening. Next week, Mr. Adams, Mr. Levant, and Mr. Kieran will be with us again. And our guest of honor will be one of the ablest newspaper men of our day, the well-known author of Mrs. Astor's Horse, The Nightclub Era, and City Editor, Stanley Walker. Now editor of the Philadelphia Evening Public Ledger. To all you listeners, we say, please send your questions along, and if you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use the question, and another $10 if we fail to answer it correctly. That means $15 in all if you win. Send your letters with questions to Information Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Here's a special announcement. Canada Dry is honored to have the privilege of supplying Canada Dry water, ginger ale, and flavor beverages to Their Majesties King George VI and Queen Elizabeth at all official functions and aboard the Royal Train throughout their tour of Canada and the United States. All water for cooking and table service used during this trip is supplied exclusively by Canada Dry, the same water that is used in making all Canada Dry beverages. This is Milton Cross saying good night, all.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.